welcome to the newcomers. Welcome back to those of you that have been sitting in these chairs for a little while. We're going to continue talking about theologies of creation care, and this is our last speaker in this session. Let me introduce to you Lowell Bliss, director of Eden Vigil Institute at William Carey International University. Today he'll be talking about addressing the crisis of discipleship in climate action. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Lowell Bliss.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I have to tell you, it's a real honor to follow David and Ed. I told this to Ed privately in the spring, and I'll say it publicly. When my wife and I returned from India and Pakistan and were just entering this space, no one opened more doors or gave a greater welcome than Ed. And I'll be internally grateful. Rather, thank you. Yep. I was discipled in young earth creationism in a middle school Sunday school class at Highland Baptist Church in Junction City, Kansas. And that word discipleship is the correct word because it was a Sunday school class, for crying out loud. And it was about forming me as a Christian. Now, some of you may recall the textbook debate in Kansas, but I have to tell you, there was nothing clownish about Mr. Ashley Anderson, our Sunday school teacher. He's a science teacher who turned into an elementary school principal, and he seemed to admire my intellect, and I loved him for that. But this was also my first experience in disintegration, because in my ninth grade year, I took a geology class, and when it came time for the final exam, I answered about the ancient ages of the earth. Because while I was dedicated to the Lord Jesus Christ, I was also dedicated to getting straight A's. But I remember even walking out of that exam and saying, that's a strange feeling. Now let's fast forward a few years to the March for Science on April 22nd, 2017. Anyone participate in one of those? Right there in Manhattan, Kansas, Kansas State University. I can tell you, we were not Extinction Rebellion. The chant was, what do we want? Good science. When do we want it? Only after it's been peer reviewed. But it was an experience in the tension inherent in what we might call scientific activism. Even just this spring, there was another article that came out, a comet that made its way even into Nature. Here's the quote. While this comment is not a critique of climate activism per se, I am foremost concerned by an increasing number of climate scientists becoming climate activists, because scholars should not have a priori interest in the outcome of their studies. We understand that, right? And yet still, we can see the tension in that. Or I think about the conference at the Bolger Center here in Washington, D.C., the first Christian climate change conference that I ever attended. One of our colleagues, an atmospheric scientist from Washington, many of you would know, he declared, I can tell you as a physicist that the planet is warming, but don't invite me into your discussions on messaging and mobilization. That's just not me. Again, we can understand that. But I remember in 2010 when Gavin Schmidt, this renowned NASA climate researcher, said this in the New York Times. If you ask me as a person, do I think the Russian heat wave has to do with climate change? The answer is yes. If you ask me as a scientist whether I have proved it, the answer is no, at least not yet. And again, we get that, we understand that, but there's some tension if you have the word person or human in one sentence, and then you have the word scientist in the second sentence. There's this tension, really, of disintegration. Now, I think where we feel this most strongly is among the youth and our younger leaders. And I'll tell it this way. When I think of the creation care movement, the evangelical creation care movement, over the past 15 years. I think nothing, we feel no greater sense of collective pride, more pride, than in what EEN and so many of our colleagues have done with Young Evangelicals for Creation, for Climate Action, or YECA. They're a wonderful bunch. They've always had wonderful leaders. We get a chance to welcome Lauren Kim, who's the new national director. But here's the thing about YECA. We will always have YECA, because there will always be evangelical families graduating evangelical students into our historically evangelical schools. So they will find each other around this issue. We will always have YECA. We will always have success in YECA, right? Because they've got the passion, they've got the skill set. And quite likely once a year, they will always be picked up by someone in the mainstream media who wants to hear their intergenerational testifying against their own bias. They're newsworthy. But here's the story that doesn't get told. And it gets told at the Christian Climate Observers Program, which I'll describe shortly, which is where we bring emerging leaders to the climate summits for a discipled and immersive experience in climate action. These YECA students will come to, like they did last year, to Dubai. They will engage the program fulsomely, but then toward the end of their time there, they'll say, "Lowell, can I have a cup of coffee with you?" And we'll sit down and they'll say, "Lowell, I don't think I believe anymore. I don't think I believe anymore." They leave YECA no longer young, right? Something has been beaten out of them. They've engaged the struggle, they've met the resistance, and they've aged. Often they don't leave and they're no longer evangelical, even though they remain committed to climate action. I call it a crisis. I think it's also a challenge. And here's where we get to say to ASA, we get to say to BioLogos, well done. You remember that period, don't you? When your heart was broken by your own children, by your own students, by the kids in your churches who long to do good science and to hold to their faith. You held their hand, you built the case, you discipled them in a vision for what it can mean to be a Christian and to do good science. And here's the challenge. I think we need to do it again, but this time with the idea of scientific activism. Helping them to lead an integrated life. And what I would argue is that it calls for a frame, a new frame, and I'm going to argue that that new frame really is discipleship. Now, discipleship traditionally on these campuses have been delegated to Campus Crusade, let's see hands. InterVarsity, let's see hands. Navigators, let's see hands, right? And we'll talk a little bit about their model and how it remains very compromised. You know, back in 2015, as I give you a chance to examine one of my favorite photos of that year, this is from the COP21 Climate Summit in Paris. I like this photo because there's our friends John Elwood and Brian Webb with their little caps and their scarves, and there's George Marshall in his overcoat. I'm the one who turned it to grayscale because I think this is like, you know, the French resistance during World War II. George Marshall really at the time was, I think, the world's leading expert on climate messaging. And we had just stepped out of a seminar with him. And George would say this, "The worst thing that ever happened to climate change is that it was framed as an environmental issue. It was delegated to the environmentalists to care about." Now, mind you, he also said the worst thing that happened to climate change was it was framed to be about the polar bears, or it was framed to be about our grandchildren. I think George ran into so many frames that he burned out and he retired a couple years ago. But nonetheless, frames signify. And in 2015, we had so many Christian frames that we could choose from. Now, before I left for the Gordon Conference that year, the Lausanne WEA Creation Care Conference, Laudato Si had just been released by Pope uh, Francis. I printed off a copy. I went and took it to a retreat in Genesee Abbey in upstate New York. That was my reading. And when I left, the first thing that appeared on my newsfeed is actually this article right here from the Baltimore Sun. And so I tracked it down, and that's it, where they say, Pope Francis frames climate change as a moral issue. And my first thought was, damn, we just lost Laudato Si. Because, of course, climate change is a moral issue. So was Vietnam War. So was nuclear non-proliferation, right? And Laudato Si said so much more than that. It said it was a love issue, and it was a compassion issue, and a justice issue, and a Jesus issue, and a worship issue. But that was the frame. The world did not need the church to build the moral case for climate change. And if our frame for discipleship was to create better moralists, that's the worst, most deadly form of discipleship possible, right? So that was one frame. There you see a picture as well, half of the WEA Creation Care Network. Some of you might see your faces there, right? We were developing the Cape Town Commitment, and with this phrase, creation care is a gospel issue within the Lordship of Christ. But what's interesting about that phrase to me is that that's not how it's worded. It's worded, creation care is thus a gospel issue within the Lordship of Christ. And we need the preamble that Ed read for us. For to proclaim the gospel that says Jesus is his Lord is to proclaim the gospel that includes the earth, since Christ's lordship is over all creation. That's like a second order of logic that we are asking people to engage and to understand. And so I've always felt with this phrase that we needed Ed Brown on speed dial, or we needed Chris Wright in our back pocket, right, to engage it. And of course, the other thing you see in this picture, a wonderful little thesis out of the University of Oklahoma by one Jordan Page Woodward, creation care is a matter of life. There they use E in slogan at the time. The rhetoric of pro-life evangelical environmentalists, we get it. Creation care and life, right? I know what that means. You know what that means, right? But basically, if you're going to use the word pro-life, you're putting a political frame on it. And particularly among the young, they're running away from pro-life. You've put really a culture war frame on climate change. You've participated in that. Any number of frames. I wish we had taken advantage of the frame that John Stott offered us in 2010 with the publication of his last book. This is called The Radical Disciple, where he claims that creation care is one of the eight neglected aspects of discipleship. Now, we could argue that discipleship is just another frame, but in some ways, it's a totalizing frame. I've got that word actually in my notes too, totalizing frame, right? It's comprehensive. It really is the essence of the Great Commission, which we're told from Matthew 28 is not about going, neither is it about baptizing or about teaching them to do all that you command. Those are just the participles attached to the main objective, which is make disciples. Make disciples. It's comprehensive. And of course, by this time, we had really a much better understanding of what integrative and life-giving discipleship looks like through the life's work of Dallas Willard. His book, The Divine Conspiracy, Renovation of the Heart, what have you. He argued that discipleship is becoming an apprentice to Jesus. Jesus is a master craftsperson. He knows how to do love. He knows how to do life. He knows how to do everything, and we're invited to come alongside him for that purpose. The other thing that he argued is, when you look at the practices, common practices that are proposed for discipleship, and we'll see how Navigator talks about study, the Bible, prayer, fellowship, and witness, Dallas Willard said any and all of these practices are simply this. being with Jesus in order to learn from Jesus how to be like Jesus, right? And that too is a life-giving presence of Christ in the middle of where we're at. And then Dallas Willard even challenged WWJD. He says, really, that makes no sense. Jesus has no experience of our modern society, no experience of climate change, no experience of driving cars. Instead, we should say WWJD, if he were me, what would Jesus do? If he were me living at the end of the Holocene, what would Jesus do? If he were me living in the climate crisis, what would he do? If he were me, a scientific activist living in the tension between science and activism, what would Jesus do, right? There's scope there. There's scope there. That's not how I was discipled. This is me in 1980, my freshman year here in this very city, right? And I was discipled, not looking much older than that other photo that you saw. And here's this famous wheel from Navigators and the practices of witnessing, prayer, the word, and fellowship. This diagram has evolved over time from the 1970s, when according to the current website at Navigators, it was said that God gave this illustration to Dawson Trotman. That's always a dangerous thing to do, and it's probably always dangerous to put the registration logo at the bottom of it afterwards, right? But you can see how it's evolved with this idea of obedience or living your life. Fellowship wasn't on the early ones, but now we've got the obedient Christian in action instead of that font that allows Christ at the hub and the power of the wheel, and then Christ at the center of your identity to have any sort of connection. You might think that we could find climate action in the how they explain the obedient Christian in action, and of course you can put it in there, but it doesn't pop out at you. Okay, here's the summary, and then I'm going to just follow up with just some final examples. I believe there is a crisis among evangelical scientific activists. They want to be more integrated than what they are. I do argue it's a crisis of discipleship. I do believe we need to heed John's call, John Stott's call, to make it about discipleship, and we need to make it to look a lot like Dallas Willard's vision of what integrated apprenticeship, integrated renovation of the heart looks like. With the time left, I'll just run through some of these examples of discipleship as it has played itself out for me in my experience of climate action. And may as well just look at it in terms of how prayer, what we've learned about prayer, what we've learned about the word, what we've learned about fellowship and witnessing. Through the experience of the Christian Climate Observers Program, where we do take emerging leaders to the climate summits, but then also through another program called Climate Intercessors, where once a month we have a global Zoom prayer meeting about issues of climate action. When it comes to prayer, I learned a lot immediately from a book that my classmate Rick Ostrander wrote, The Life of Prayer in a World of Science. And there he introduced us to John Tyndale, who died in 1893. He was a physicist and a father of modern climate scientists. There you can see the experiment apparatus that helped prove the greenhouse effect. He was also introduced the prayer gauge debate, which really demanded that prayer be subjected to the scientific method. And there's so much around that, but you can see how it works itself out in this one quote, this one incident. In 1865, there was a cattle plague, and the Dean of Westminster Abbey, who was a conscientious objector to prescribed special prayers, asked Tyndale, I hope and think, Tyndale, what to do about these prayers. He didn't want to pray them. So here's what Tyndale said. I hope and think, Tyndale replied, that you will not pray as others for the stain of this plague, but will ask on contrary for the strength of heart and clearness of mind to meet it manfully and fight against it intelligently. So don't even pray about the plague. Don't even pray about climate change, right? And sure enough, that's what Stanley did. Preached on the text, "Thy will be done," saying that he considered it the only intelligent prayer for a Christian, right? So Harry Emerson Fosdick came out of this. He developed a whole stream of prayer about the spiritual athlete as compared to the miracle-seeking evangelical. And I think some of the things we've learned about prayer is there's value in developing our spiritual athleticism. The mainstream Christians, our brothers and sisters, were not wrong, because it is a long struggle for justice. We need those resources. Prayer is so much about discernment, about trust in God, and I've got a wonderful Wendell Berry quote that you're not going to hear unless you raise it as in questions. Okay, let me go through the last three slides, and then you can follow up with questions. The word, we need to get beyond what Deb Rinstra has called the greatest hits of climate change or of creation care, those verses we gravitate to, Genesis 1:28, Psalm 24:1. A book that has been a great deal of help here is Pete Inns's book, How the Bible Actually Works. And the subtitle is, in which I explain how an ancient and ambiguous, diverse book leads us to wisdom rather than answers, and why that's great news. And what this teaches us is exegesis is not a lazy pursuit. We've got to take the Bible and figure out what it means if it were written to us as the audience and not to not to these ancient audiences. And so consequently, we've got these Bible studies. Here's one thing that I've done out of Mark 10. Blind Bartimaeus sits astride the Keystone XL pipeline, okay? Bartimaeus knows nothing about the Keystone XL pipeline, but he knows a thing or two about being asked by Jesus, what specifically do you want, right? And so the main point here is, if the Bible has anything to say about life, if it speaks to living life, it speaks to living your life in the climate crisis, and we've got to open up the entirety of Scripture to our preaching. Here's a thing on fellowship. Churches have become unsafe places. We've got to explore what it means to provide safety or alternative forms of community. In the middle here, you see Lindsay Linsky, science ed, PhD, teaches at University of North Georgia. When she was with us at COP25, her comment was, when I'm in school, I'm the only climate activist. When I'm in the university, I'm the only Christian. Again, we've got to do that same work that you did earlier for Christians in science. Do it again. Do it again for Christians in science activists. Last thing on witnessing, I'll affirm what Ed was talking about, integral mission. And I will argue this last point. We argue at our climate program, when they have these badges and they go into the climate summits as observers, that if we were going to build a theology of being a climate observer, we would turn to the book of Revelation, because they actually use the word observer. Now, they use the word martyr, which is also the word witness. And the thing to know about the martyrs is they did not become martyrs because they were bloodied. They were bloodied because they chose to do the work of being a witness, of being a martyr. And the sum up, Book of Revelation does not have an S in it. There's many visions. The Book of Revelation, there's only one revelation, and that is this. Jesus is Lord and Caesar is not, right? So that's a compelling vision for these young people. Here's where you can find me. And I encourage you, let's rise up to this challenge, especially the same way you guys did so wonderfully in the past. Thank you.
Hey, we have time for a couple questions. Well, I'll take your bait on that.
Oh, I love you. Yes. So, in terms of prayer, I talk about the great perhaps. And often you will see on Facebook this meme. Windleberry says, "Perhaps all the good that has ever come here has come because people prayed it into the world." Isn't that a great, encouraging, triumphal quote? Two problems. Number one, Windleberry never said that. His character, Jaber Crow, in the novel Jaber Crow, is the one who said that. This first-person novel of this bald bachelor barber in Kentucky living out his life in Christ in discipleship, he's engaging prayer. And he says that. The second problem is, that's not the entire quote. Listen to this. "Perhaps all the good that has ever come here has come because people prayed it into the world." How would a person know? John Tyndale? How would a person know? How could divine intervention happen, if it happens, without looking like a coincidence or a luck? Does the world continue by chance, since it can hardly do so by justice, or by the forgiveness and mercy that some people have continued to pray for? Why do we continue to pray for the climate crisis? Faithfulness, and because of the good and the great, perhaps. Perhaps he will help. Yeah.
How do you address the concern that if you bring in non-traditional gospel issues, they'll take over? Like, you know, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, they're all started as Christian institutions.
Yep.
Young Men's Christian Association started as Christian, they're secular. I think people have that concern, as you noted with some of the young people.
Yeah. Well, that's the issue of prioritization as well. You know, prioritizing the preaching of the gospel and saving, going to heaven when you die, as compared to integral mission, working all of that out. I once heard Gordon MacDonald ask the question what he thinks of the emergent church. This was back in the day, right? 2000, early 2000s. And he said, "Well, I think the emerging church is whatever those under age 30 are going to make it," which is true, right? It's true. And one thing I say in my notes is we've got to be careful in our discipleship to make it about pushing these dear believers closer to Christ and not buttressing up our evangelical infrastructure or evangelical programming. There's a wonderful quote by Garrison Keillor one time in one of his Lake Wobegon things. There was a character, her name was Corrine, and I've got it in here as well. "She doesn't believe in God, but there is evidence God believes in her." And I feel that when I encounter these students. Yeah, the Spirit will show up for them the same way he showed up for us. Yeah.
Last question.
Okay.
Okay. Mostly freshmen. And one of the things I see consistently from them and the other young people in my life is that they know that their elders in the church don't take them seriously and don't respect them. Mm-hmm. And don't respect their concerns on things like justice and environmental justice.
Yeah. Actually, don't turn it into a question. Turn it into a testimony. We're dying to hear what you do. Yeah. What do you do?
I'm a recovering academic.
Okay.
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 I think you're giving a talk tomorrow.
I am research.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We'll continue that discussion then. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah.